Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to another episode of Farm Tech Talk, the Livestock Show. It's early October, the temperatures have dropped, the rain has stayed with us, and there is talk of plastic coming off silage pits already. Shout out to our supporters, Ornua, European Milk Forum, and Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. In a minute, I'm going to talk to Adam, Darren, and Aidan about what's happening in the fields, but as per normal, we'll start with a few quick-fire buzz-around questions to get it straight going. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, just the one question for you this week. Someone questioning what you're about. You were talking about weaning prices as €3 a kilo, but I see plenty at 250 to 260 per kilo. What marks are at the €3 per kilo?
Yeah, that's a valid comment, Jack. I suppose within any market, you have a mixture of stock. I'd be maybe heading for that top tortoise stock in terms of that €3 a kilo. I know this week, a couple of very big weaning sales are actually up 20% on numbers in Marpids database this week. But that top weaning is 311 for the 300 to 400 kilo weaning this week. The 400 kilo plus weaning is 292. And yeah, if you come back to the average, it's 254, I think, for the over 400s, and it's 273 for the 300 to 400. So look at that. It's the top tortoise probably breaking that €3 barrier.
Okay, nice one. And more detail in the business of farming section at the back of the journal there for anyone who wants the numbers every week. Darren, maybe three quick questions for you. Darren, question for you, Darren. Will you ask Darren what would he dose lambs with for Fluke now?
Yeah, Jack, it's a tricky one because there's no, say, product, good sort of product to treat immature and early immature, which is where you want to be targeting now that has a withdrawal date under 42 days. So like your clazantel-based, your triclobendazole, your rifoxonide, all of them is where you need to be at. There's lots of products on the market, Jack, that say combination products do for fluke and worms, but they do for mature, say, fluke, which isn't a threat at the moment. So stay away from them. So go for one of your good, say, flucosides, but just take note of the withdrawal period if they're lambs that are due for slaughter.
Okay, the other quick one that came in, Darren, is, hi, Jack, will you ask the lads if it's too late to spray docks and chickweed in silage ground?
Look, Jack, I suppose it's pushing on for that. Ground conditions is probably going to dictate it. I'd be getting in quick if you're going to do it. It's technically probably not, but you are pushing on. It's getting late, right?
It is shoving on, and the growth is getting slower, but there is still a little bit of growth there, says you. But there's a lot of heavy covers around the grass as well, like which makes it difficult to get to the weed in question. Last one for you, Darren. Good show. Enjoying watching it. Do you cover anything on rare breeds? Thinking of getting some black wool sheep for the kids to nurture interest. What are the best type? I should have asked Adam this question, but Darren, you better take it.
I'll probably go up and do an article with Adam in a few weeks, Jack, and we can profile, see how he's getting on.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still there, Darren. I don't know if they're still there.
Warts and all. Yeah.
So, look, joking aside, there's been a real, I suppose, influx of these, Jack. That, like, we were back 2 or 3 years ago, there's warble sheep or the ones we were talking about. Now you have the Dutch spotted, you have Dassenkopf. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. So, like, you have a lot of, I suppose, maybe different ones. You have blue Texels have become very popular, Jack. Mm-hmm. I suppose it's what you're targeting. Warble would have been, say, milking sheep. They would be more prolific, whereas the other breeds are probably more on the terminal side. Any of them will do that job, Jack. The pedigree sales have passed by now, but in normal mare sales, you'll pick up crossbred your lambs, which could do what that person is looking for.
Yeah, no, excellent. That's it for the quick fire, lads. Thanks for that. No, I've no Aidan yet. He'll be coming in later on the show, hopefully, and I might fire one that I have at him then. Adam, coming back to you, in terms of weather conditions, we mentioned it at the top of the show. Like, I mean, it's getting tough, and it's getting tough. When it's tough down here, it's probably getting tough up your country a little bit more so. Like, I mean, is it fair to say, is there stock coming in?
There is, Jack. Yeah, there's a lot of bales open in the last few days. I'd say this weekend now, we'll see a lot of people that's working off farm. I'd say take the opportunity at the weekend to house stock. The only thing in that, Jack, I guess, is temperatures. While we've had a lot of rain in the last 7 days, we've been up at 40 mil, I think, here in Cavan. And ground conditions are pretty poor now. They've changed really, really quick. We were doing really, really well up until last week, but it's just changed really, really quickly. But the big one is temperatures, and I guess bringing in young calves or bringing in weanlings, you'd be wary about that. We've said a little bit on management notes this week. Maybe the thing to do is to put in your cows and try and keep your calves back out again. And maybe if the cows are in eating silage, it's going to guard against tetany anyway. They're the heavier cattle, so it pays probably to take them in. But if you could keep the weanlings out, putting weanlings in, and if it's going to get very warm at the weekend and then damp, muggy conditions, it'd be perfect conditions for pneumonia in sheds. So I'd be saying keep the weanlings out if you can at all.
The other piece on that, Adam, is there's a good bit of grass around the place, like.
There is, Jack, yeah. We talked a bit on management notes this week about that as well. And those weanlings will eat that grass and keep them out for another while in terms of light weanlings. We've also talked about sheep, I suppose, coming in on beef farms. And look, that's an option, and it can be a nice maybe cash flow injection on some farms that don't have sheep. I guess the problem is there's no problem getting sheep farmers to bring on sheep. There's sometimes a problem getting them to take them off. Again, just the importance of knowing who you're bringing on, have an agreement as to what the rate is, and have a date for when they're going again.
Yeah, absolutely. Have it written down, I'd say, because the sheep tend to stay around a long time. Like, Adam, there's some positive news on beef demand. Like, I mean, is it fair to say that the demand piece has spiked a bit? Like.
Yeah, we broke a story Monday evening, Jack, from the UK. I guess we're seeing chaos over there at the moment in terms of labour shortages in processors and labour shortages in hauliers, and those supply chains really creaking over there in terms of throughput. And that is, maybe there's a silver lining in that cloud for Irish beef finishers, in that I guess British retailers are putting in place contingency plans for the next 6 or 8 weeks. I mentioned the word Christmas. I know we're a long way off that, but in terms of the buy-in for Christmas market, that'll take place now in November, and that November kill is the important one for the run-up to Christmas. And they're looking to Irish processors, I suppose, to ramp up supplies. We're expecting big, I suppose, sales. And beef is a key driver for footfall into supermarkets. I suppose if you take milk is milk no matter what shop you buy it in, but beef is different, and you can get different beef in different shops. And research has shown that somebody will actually go to a shop where they know they can buy good beef, so it's and there is beef there. So it's very, very important for supermarkets to have a good supply of beef and have good beef. So there's an advanced stage of signing agreements with Irish processors. So if that's the case, that should, would say, filter back down, that that factories will be anxious for stock in the next couple of weeks. And that's a positive for beef finisher.
Isn't it highly ironic, Adam? You know, all the talk was, you know, prior about Brexit, that, listen, you know, it was a big market for the UK and, you know, for Irish meat in the UK, and it was going to be a big problem. But it's ironic, like, the actual opposite is happening now as we speak. Now, the other piece might still come. It might be still in the post, but the opposite is happening at the moment. Like.
Yeah, I guess the only piece to that, Jack, is this, I suppose, the chat from David Frost about the Northern Ireland Protocol and maybe affecting the union in terms of that trade between North and South. And we really don't want nothing to change with that, because it's working really well for everybody, and it's working well for Northern Ireland as well at the moment, in terms of there isn't any effect up there, and there doesn't seem to be any government, you know, plan across the water. Looking at video footage during the week, it's you'd almost be frustrated yourself looking at it, in terms of some of the comments being made about the pig processing sector. So yeah, it's hopefully it'll bode well for Irish finishers.
Yeah, excellent. You're up the mountains down in Kerry, I see. What took you up there?
I was, yeah. Tim O'Sullivan, Jack, a great, great farmer. A lot of history on that farm. Just outside Sneem, tough part of the country. And going up a mountain, I'm not used to maybe going up mountains. I was on the pressure, blowing hard, going up after him. But 50 years of AI, Jack, on a suckler herd. I don't think I've ever seen that. In a suckler herd, and the quality of his stock was unbelievable. And I suppose, again, typical of those maybe smaller type farmers, you know, 30 cows, really focused on quality, because when you're smaller and you're on tough ground, you need to focus on quality. And his father started AI back in the late 60s. Tim remembers going into the local phone box and ringing Kenmare Creamery to as a young gossin or whatever, to get the AI man out. And an interesting story, and there's a lot of history on that farm. So again, typical of that part of the country. And he just talked a lot about other options too. Like we talk about, I suppose there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks, Jack, about dairy beef and different bits and pieces, but there isn't any other option for him. And actually forestry might be a viable option, but given the tourism sector down there, forestry is actually banned in his area for the effect that it might have on the landscape. So the sucklers, there's not much else.
And Adam, in terms of the kind of market he was going for, like, was he going for this really flashy New England? Is that what he's kind of?
He's almost gone pedigree, Jack, without being registered. And he's actually built up a little bit of a market now for bulls, for selling bulls, I guess, pedigree non-registered bulls. Some dairy farmers and some beef farmers coming to him for those sort of Limousine and Charlie and Belgian Blue bulls. So he's built up a really strong name of having that quality cattle in the area, and it's standing to him.
Adam, you, Whip Minister Pippa Hackett was on Tullamore Farm during the week there. She was launching her Met station, or her weather station, was one of them there on Tullamore Farm. I presume you got into her with a couple of questions.
Yeah, we did. We had a good chat, Jack. A really, really honest chat, I guess, around where we're going. And, you know, one of the questions was around, you know, every time anybody talks about the national herd, they're pretty coy about it. And we talk about stabilising, and we talk about, you know, maybe capping or whatever. But she was pretty honest in terms of methane emissions, that we won't, we'll say, be able to reduce, was it methane emissions without reducing numbers. There are other ways, I guess, of increasing efficiency as regards breeding and feeding. But we'll erode those gains if we keep increasing numbers. So she was quite honest on that. I guess around, you know, cap supports, maybe I'm not say disappointed, but I was a little bit maybe surprised at some of our comments there, in terms of, you know, Tullamore Farm is set to lose a lot in terms of those leased entitlements on the farm, and like any full-time beef farm, there's going to be huge losses there in terms of the cap supports, where they're going to shift. And I put that to her, and like her answer was maybe that a lot of beef farmers aren't dependent on those supports. They're probably part-time, so they're going to keep doing what they're doing anyway. Now, she was supportive of suckler cow production, and she was quite supportive of supports going into that suckler cow in the future, because she said as regards stocking rate, it was right up their street as regards delivering environmental benefits as opposed to other farming systems. So yeah, some interesting comments, and that's on the pages this week.
We talked at the top of the show in quick about weanling prices, Adam. Like, I mean, in terms of the kind of prices that you're hearing about, I mean, again, just maybe develop out that piece in terms of what's happening out there in terms of weanling sales at the moment.
Yeah, so we've seen as part of the MarketBiz database a 20% increase in throughput this week, and it's probably a tale of two halves in terms of that. Wheanland is doing really, really well, that top quality Wheanland. I was in Elfin for a while on Monday, and it'd do your heart good, Jack, to see these, you know, little bull calves and heifer calves coming in at 300 kilos and maybe being opening at 900 and tipping on for 1,000. You know, serious money and serious confidence in that sector in terms of buying those Wheanlands. But I guess if you look around the ring, and a lot of those guys might have been buying those Wheanlands to run around again in 12 months time to come back to that special bullock or heifer sale in Elfin. And I guess if they get them into 12 or 1300 next year and they hold their payments, that's the system, and they enjoy doing it. I guess on the other side of things, maybe those planar type cattle and those forward store cattle, maybe, you know, the Herefords and Angus is maybe a wee bit back this week. A lot more of them appearing in the south and might be a little bit shady less this week, but the Wheanlands definitely going very, very well. Another very busy weekend coming up this weekend. Carrie Gallon's a show on sale of heifer calves. I'm up there and we'll have it in the paper next week as regards to the trade. We're expecting a very good trade for that. So Wheanland's going well, and maybe older cattle a little bit back.
Adam, 100%. We'll leave it at that there for this week. Darren, looking at you, maybe just again to kind of pick up on one of the topics that we started at the top of the show, dosing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, you've a big feature on kind of dosing in the paper this week. I mean, the farmer asked what dose to use now for Fluke. Like, I mean, you were kind of in the quick fire round, you were saying it's hard to say. It's hard exactly to kind of nail down exactly your colours to the mast on this one.
Yeah, Jack, and look at, I suppose this week's article is part of a bigger initiative by Chagas UCD, the Department of Agriculture, around sustainable use of wormers. And we've seen, I suppose, antimicrobial resistance crop up on a lot of sheep farms. And like one of the main contributors at the moment is a lot of people, I suppose, maybe are too good to the sheep in this dosing yaws for worms when they don't need it. Like look at they built up a natural immunity. The only caveat to that is a yaw that might be in very poor condition or ill health, but then you want to have a question mark about what's driving that. Yes, they might need to be dosed, but should you be keeping them true to breeding at all? And I think part of it, Jack, is sort of around the whole area. There's a big problem as well with combination products at this time of year. And there's a lot of sheep farmers by their nature along the Western Seaboard or maybe along more marginal areas, they like to give a Fluke dose before yours go to the ram. Mm-hmm. And combination products seem like good value. Like if you're getting a wormer and a Fluke dose together, it seems like sort of this, Ginny, yeah. Why wouldn't I do it? Like the big issue probably comes in this. Some of the combination products they treat for mature liver fluke, and mature liver fluke is not any problem at the moment. Mature liver fluke is your traditional bottle jaw, anemia, that type of thing. Like that'll be out the next sort of January, February, March. So what you need to be treating for now is a product that'll have early mature or immature flukes to target that. So something that's, say, clazantel-based, triclobendazole, which would be, say, your Fasenix, that type of thing, rafoxinide, and then even your nitroxyls. And look at, I think that sheep farmers, a lot of them don't realise, or beef farmers or suckler farmers yet, the Trodax will soon be off, it ceased production, so there's a limited amount of it left. So there will be some farmers that will get maybe a last use out of that. But going back to the wormers, Jack, look, there should be no need for healthy, mature sheos. On the flip side to that, don't forget your lambs that are going with the ram, or don't forget your ram that goes off with the yo. Every year, the vet labs get a number of rams that go in for post-mortem that have cost big money. The vets open them up, and they've been running with yours for a while, and it has been forgotten. And look, it very easy happened. That there's a high worm burden in the ram, and that hasn't been addressed. And look, it might be what has killed them, but it could be what has brought on something else like pneumonia or something like that.
I hear you. Okay, nice one. Good reminder, Darren. In terms of hill lambs, if I went to the mart now to pick up a handful of hill lambs, what kind of money am I talking about paying out?
Yeah, look, we have. A fellow county man, or I'm not sure that he's a fellow county man, but he's working in your county anyway, Jack. We talked to Jonathan O'Sullivan and Dan McCarthy this week. Just look, I talked to some more MARC managers. We have a feature from Karen Dunne as well, in just to see where the hill lamb thing was. And look what Adam said about the weanlings, that it's heartening to see. Look, it's really good to see that the hill lamb is getting a good twist, or the hill farmer is getting a good twist this year. Because hill lambs have done well by their nature in previous years, but it's been the lambs that have been killed out in sort of February, March and April just have left a margin. And the primary producer who has lambed him hasn't got the benefit of them. So this year, thankfully, it is hill lamb prices are running 10 to 15 euros above this time last year. You asked a question, Jack, about what you'd pay. Take a typical Scotch lamb, maybe a light enough boned one. You're looking 220, 230 a kilo. Better type or a bigger frame Scotch lamb, say ram lamb that's fit to get into French market where it's easier, pushing up to 240 to 250 a kilo. And then looking at, say, some of your horned ram lambs or your poly ram lambs, Suffolk Texel sort of crosses, somewhere, Jack, around 260 to 280 a kilo. And then the trade that's really on fire is the trade for that crossbred Yo lamb.
So that crossbred Yo lamb, as you say, she's the one that's making big money, we'll say, in the market at the moment. That's for your 40 kilo kind of Yo lamb, crossbred Yo lamb. She's the one that's really making. Were you going to say 3 euros a kilo, were you?
Yeah, Jack, they're tipping in now as far as 3 euros a kilo. Like I seen 29 kilos making 91 euros. Jonathan O'Sullivan was saying like this, that some of the better sort of maybe your lambs that showing more continental breeding, that they actually hit 310, 315 on Tuesday sale, where there will be more, I suppose, maybe more lowland sheep hit as high as 320 a kilo. So look, there is a bit of appetite there, Jack, for that your lamb breeding potential. Whether or not, I suppose, buying at that, Jack, is going to leave much of a margin if they're hanging up next spring, who knows? We said, we talked this time last year, where fellas mad to be paying what they were, and we ended up with a roaring trade all spring. So I think that was driving the optimism. And like, look at, if you had to look at lamb prices at the moment, like pushing on anywhere from 620 to 640 a kilo this week, I suppose the regular sellers are pushing for 630, 640, going into 645. You won't be long till you're hitting 650 a kilo, Jack. That's about a euro 20 ahead of this time last year. If we went back 2 years ago, it's 2 euros a kilo. So like, it's easy to see why the confidence is there in store lamb.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's as you say, the market is continuously rising. And I mean, one of the big issues will be, I suppose, managing your system, Darren, so that you have the grass for next spring. Because you know, we talked about Adam there, we were joking about, you know, getting in sheep around the place and that they'd never leave, you know, but I mean, even fertilizer, for example, now is going to be obviously very expensive if available next spring, you know, for a lot of people. Like, so you're really going to have to kind of mass at this end of the year in order to have something kind of for next February.
Oh, definitely, Jack. Look at it, and a lot of the people that are buying them stores, I suppose, they do have that bit of surplus grass. So you need to be watching what lamb you're buying. There's like something that often I think happens in the market is this: you have an idea, you go into your head, you go into care market and you say, right, I'm going to spend 85 or 90 euros on a lamb, and you're aiming to get a 37 to 40 kilo lamb. You go in and the trade is on fire, and you come home with a 32 or 33 kilo lamb, and you end up putting the pile of money into meal and him. So it's to do your budget, do what lamb suits. Like this time of the year, from now on, with say heavy rain, a lamb will do maybe 100 grams to 120 grams a day. Like, you're looking at less than a week, a kilo live weight gain a week. Like, if you had a very good run, dry ground, they'll probably do a kilo. But if we were in a month's time, Jack, and if the rain kept coming and grass utilization is poor and dry matter is low, 50 to 80 grams might do a lot of them lambs. So it's important, as you say, to stick, I suppose, maybe decide what type of a lamb that you want and to stick with that and try and drive that. Just on Adam's comment, Jack, we should probably be charging some of the beef farmers for the condition that we leave the swards in. So some of them lads there would have white owl grass coming next year if it wasn't grazed out.
The added value, like, yeah, exactly. Two quick ones to finish up with, Darren. The soil, the department soil sample program, that was ongoing again this week, closed up there just kind of this evening in terms of kind of final numbers, like, but it's well oversubscribed, it is fair to say.
Yeah, Jack, so we haven't just any figures from them this evening, but like, if we looked at there on Wednesday, it was at 11,500. There was another, I think, sort of last minute rush yesterday. So I'd say, Jack, I wouldn't be surprised if you're somewhere between 13 and 15,000. And look, at who's to know that we oversubscribed. Maybe it might be like we, and there'll be a few more quid thrown towards us, which would be great to see.
Last one, Darren, next week is a big week in terms of the budget. What are we watching, I suppose, in terms of the big ticket items that we kind of might come up and might come into the headlines next week?
Yeah, Jack, look, it's all around schemes, and the EU, say, Commission has given approval to roll over all the schemes. The big ticket items are glass, 202 million. There's about 80 million between BDGP and BBES. There's another 20-odd million in the sheep welfare scheme. Between the store and corporation measure and the protein aid scheme, you're talking 14 or 15 million. TAMS for me, Jack, is the big one. Like, I think all of them ones I mentioned there, I can't see how they won't be rolled over. I can't see how TAMS won't be rolled over either, but it'll be the level of funding. There was 80 million allocated in the 2021 budget, and a lot of that was to clear a backlog. So I think a lot of dairy farmers in particular are hoping that there'll be another 80 million, particularly with concerns that the likes of Parlours won't be granted in the capital investment scheme from 2023. So for me, that's the one to watch. But I do think that there's an appetite that most of the other schemes, given the fact that they've got EU approval, that it'd be bad if the department didn't match the funding with them.
Okay. Excellent, Darren. 100%. Leave it at that. We'll chat again next week, and we'll have more detail on the budget online and in print, as you, and we'll take it from there. Thanks, Darren, for that. Aidan, good to have you with us. I know you're actually on a farm, and I know you haven't much time, but a couple of quick ones, I suppose. I mean, one of the pieces you have this week is in terms of that whole environmental piece and what's happening on farms and what's happening on those Chagas farm walks that are on at the moment. Like, I know you were on a farm last week in Kilkenny, and there's a piece in the paper on it this week. Maybe just kind of give us a feel for that piece in terms of what it is or where it's going.
Yeah, so I suppose, Jack, it was the first Glenbey and Chagas Giant Program farm walk for 2 years because of COVID. And I suppose it's also the first of the Signpost Farm Programs, which is a new the new Chagas initiative that has, you know, industry backers and industry buy-in. So that was the first farm walk. And look, I mean, I suppose things have changed over the last few years since the last farm walk, and the environmentalism now has a much greater emphasis in terms of our overall farm systems and everything that we're doing on farms. Like, it's first and front and foremost now in almost everything. So I have a comment piece in the paper this week on it. You know, I was kind of critical of the farm walk in one regard, because I felt it was out of balance, really, in one sense. It was too much of a focus on too many elements within the environment, and probably not enough in terms of profit and production, which is all sustainability. Yeah. As well, like, you know, if you're not profitable, you're not going to be sustainable. Now, look, I mean, obviously, it was Cottle Moran's farm, a large farm, really top class farmer. But I didn't learn anything about how he's managing grass, how he's managing cows, you know, and what the profitability of the farm is, and where the profitability of the farm is going to go over the next 5 years. And that's kind of the point I was trying to get at. I just went away a little bit confused. I was talking to the other farmers that were on it as well, and they were feeling the same, you know. So, everyone that opens their gate to the farm, you know, for farmers is doing everyone a great service, but at the same time, we need to have good messages coming out of it. So that's kind of why I felt it was a little bit out of balance, unfortunately, you know. But look, I mean, it's the first walk in a long time, and we're all learning, and it's a new era and all the rest. So it's, you know.
Yeah. One other quick question, Aidan, I'll leave you go then. There was a question in, and we missed you for the quick fire round, but this farmer is kind of working off farm, right? The question came in, he's milking 90 cows, feeding 800 kilos a meal per cow per year. He has a bit of family labour at the moment, but he won't in the future. And he's thinking of once a day milking or flexible milking, like, you know. So, I mean, obviously, you know, he's going to drop milk solids, especially in the first couple of years. Isn't that, like, that's fair to say? We're dropping the order of 20, 30%, something like that.
Yeah, generally, Jack, you're, in terms of milk solids, it's about a 20% drop. But in terms of volume of milk alone, so exclude your fat and protein percentages of the solids, it's about a 30% drop. If you go once a day, you know, that's while you're on the period of once a day. If you do once a day for shorter periods, like 6 weeks, the cows will recover then again. But during that period of once a day, it's about a 20% drop in milk solids. So it's quite severe, you know, but you do hear farmers that are once a day, and maybe they're producing the same level of milk now that they were when they're twice a day, but they've probably worked over the last number of years and culling the cows just aren't suitable to once a day. Yeah. So there's going to be a proportion of cows that will start dying off this time, like, you know, probably back in August, September, yeah, just because they're just not getting milked often enough. And yeah, and they've lost, you know, they've put on too much condition score and they're just dried themselves off. Yeah. You mentioned flexible milking, and that's kind of the buzzword, you know, it's a new yeah, topic at the moment. There's a lot more talk around it. And really the key one there is probably the 10 and 7. So you're doing 10 milkings in 7 days. And look, it is flexible, so there's different ways of looking at that. But really, the key there is that you're only milking once a day on the Saturday and Sunday. So it's really conducive to having, you know, easier work days the weekends. And then on a Monday, a Wednesday, and a Friday, you're milking twice a day. Okay. But you're probably, you know, it's trialed in New Zealand, and the results are actually very promising. The only kind of drawback I would see to it is that on the days you're milking once, which mightn't suit this man now if he's part-time or whatever, you're actually supposed to milk at maybe 11 o'clock in the day, which obviously isn't ideal. You know, you want, yeah, to be, you know, most farmers want to milk early and be finished up. Now, that's the optimum. So obviously, if you milked it at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, it wouldn't be the end of the world either. But you're not going to get the same level of, yeah, you know, you might drop more milk terms if that happens, okay, you know.
Where are you walking today, Aidan? The weather is a bit wet, yeah?
So I was in Johnston Castle this morning, and I'm now on a farm in Wexford again this afternoon, looking at multi-species swords. So okay, I've got a few discussion groups out and about, Jack. Yeah. Great that you're able to do it. So I'm with a group today touring around. And so look, I mean, we're on a farm. Like Johnston Castle, they're growing the same level of grass with on the multi-species swords as they are on the grass clover swords, but only spreading 62 kilos of N. And 150 kilos of N in the grass clover. So multi-species are looking good in Johnston Castle is the key message I take away from it. But they're only in 2 years. So, you know.
Okay. Excellent. Aidan, 100% leave it at that. Earlier, I had a chat with David Corbett from Grassland Agro. We were talking about some of the issues that Aidan has just talked about there, including the shortage of fertilizer and the fertilizer prices that are happening at the moment. Let's have a listen.
Yeah, that's the thing, Jack. Gold dust is right. Look, the stocks are not there. And I suppose there is no forward buying, Jack. Nothing. And I've been to a few garages. I suppose years gone by, you would have walked past a few corners of or corner of bags of fertilizer, you know, and you wouldn't take any notice. But look, they're a godsend to farmers. And look, Jack, the supply is not there. Manufacturers are not. They don't have supply of fertilizer, so I suppose the merchants and the fertilizer companies don't. I suppose as a result, so yeah, look, it's worrying. It's worrying, Jack. But look, there are a lot of things we can brush up on going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably worth talking about some of those, and we might just touch off them in a few minutes. But I was going to say that, like, there will, and that's a big change for a lot of farmers. We'll say, especially a lot of dairy farmers that would have forward purchased fertilizer for next year. Like there's going to be no forward purchasing of fertilizer, you know, in autumn 2021. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, Jack. Yeah, definitely. And I suppose up to maybe a month ago, Jack, it was probably a case where farmers were probably not going to purchase because the uncertainty in the price. I suppose fertilizer prices had increased a lot. But now it's a matter that there is no supply there. So there are not going to be stocks there on farm in the springtime. Yeah. No.
Yeah. And so really any talk of price, as you say, is kind of irrelevant really at this current time. Like, you know, but prices are kind of twice the price, I suppose, effectively of kind of where it was this time last year. But really it doesn't mean much because the supply isn't there, like.
Yeah, like up to probably a month or 6 weeks ago, Jack, you would have been talking maybe two to two and a half times the price of what fertilizer was maybe this time last year. I suppose that was the jump over the year, probably two to two and a half times. But essentially, you couldn't, and the merchants aren't giving out a price or a quotation on fertilizer because it's not there, Jack.
Not there. There's a few going out, you know, speaking of some of the things that can do it, there's a few going out with lime. Like I regularly see white plumes, a small kitten for the sky. Like, I mean, there's a lot of white dust going around. I mean, it's a good time of the year now to try and get out a bit of lime, David.
Definitely, Jack. Yeah, 100%. And look, we see year after year the soil fertility results coming out from Chagas, like, and look, it's a good indicator of the I suppose the soil samples and the soil tests around the country. But lime is a big problem, Jack, and it's going to be the I suppose the new godsend, and getting the pH right in the soil is going to be massive in driving the efficiency of that nitrogen. And look, Jack, into next year, we're talking about, I don't know, the first round of fertilizer, that first round of nitrogen is probably going to be questionable. Slurry is probably going to be a big player for that first round of fertilizer. And look, Jack, we need to get that lime right, because we need to get the efficiency from that nitrogen, from the peas and from the K's. And look, unless we have the lime, the peas and the K's at optimum, the efficiency is not there, Jack.
Yeah. I mean, have you heard anything on lime supplies recently, David? Like, is there plenty of it around?
Yeah, look, Jack, I was out on a particular farm today, actually, Jack, and look, I suppose there probably is a panic on lime, and supplies are maybe coming under a bit of pressure, and maybe just down to the ability to manufacture and keep up with the demand. But look, Jack, I suppose as time goes on now, and look, it's an ideal time for spreading lime now. The ground conditions are still fairly good. We have got a bit of rain. And look, even if there's covers of grass there, rain is not too far away this time of year, and there is going to be a wash in there. But yeah, look, supplies are probably under a bit of pressure, but the window is small. And look, what I would say, Jack, is with the way fertilizer is going, so uncertain, like I can't even give you an answer, Jack, in what's going to happen in the springtime. Soil sample over the winter. Soil sample is the cheapest thing you'll do. Look, you'll do probably 4 hectares there, it'll cost you maybe about 25 euro a sample, 25 euro, Jack, and you're talking about a bag you can, like, you know. That's essentially what it is. And if you can measure that, Jack, and make a plan, get the lime out in the springtime, there's going to be a massive bounce off that lime in the springtime. Or now, whenever it's used, if you can get the lime out, it's going to be massive. And it's probably going to replace that bag nitrogen and that nitrogen. And it's important, Jack, to whatever nitrogen that we do put out next year, that the pH is right and we're getting that maximum efficiency from it.
To get the most from it. Like, I mean, is there many guys, David, testing, you know, testing slurry now? Like, you know, because I mean, as you say, that's going to be it's going to be slurry gold next year now. Like, you know, is there many guys testing it to kind of see really what's in it?
There is, Jack. Yeah, look, there is. And there's lads using hydrometers to test even the dry matter. And look, it's an indication. But again, Jack, we talk about 1,000 gallons of slurry as a bag of 5520, right? And a slurry sample, we're probably talking maybe, I don't know, 30, 35 euro sample. I'm not 100% sure on the figures, but look, it's minimal in what you're going to save, like, you know. And look, the way fertilizer is going to be now in the springtime, Jack, is look, we're going to have to be, I suppose, drip feeding where we need it, Jack, and know exactly what our soil indices are, how much we need to get out there, and I suppose be strategic with that slurry, Jack, you know. And it's going to be our first round of fertilizer, and it's going to be massive.
When you say strategic, you mean that it's going to have to be targeted at the paddocks or the fields that really need it to kind of give them a kickstart. That's what you mean, like?
Yeah, that's it, Jack. Yeah. Look, we've often heard the term, you know, the right time, right place, and the right rate. And look, it's as simple as that, Jack. You know, knowing exactly what is in the slurry and applying it where it's needed, Jack.
Yeah, nice one. The other one, David, at this time of the year is silage. And again, there's a lot of guys do a lot of testing of silage and maybe don't do a lot with the results, etc. either at this kind of thing. Like, in terms of testing the silage, like, I mean, what's the real benefit of it, or what do guys take from it?
Yeah, definitely, Jack. And look, no more than the soil tests, no more than the slurry test. Look, we're testing production on cows, Jack, you know, and I suppose the silage is another one. And look, information is going to be key going forward, Jack. Information is going to be everything. And there's so many indicators on farm as well, Jack. Like, you look at a cow and even just looking at her and how loose she is or how bound she is, that's going to tell you a lot about her, I suppose, internally what's going on inside her, like, you know. And we talk about spring grass, and look, low dry matter is probably high in nitrogen, and cows are loose, and look, that's one side of it. But look, the other side is maybe milk ureas and that, and I have heard reports of that being high, I suppose, of recent times, and probably a lot of mineralization, a lot of organic nitrogen coming available. And the other thing was maybe a bit heavy-handed with the nitrogen, and just maybe lush grass and too much nitrogen in the grass, Jack. And that's, so cows are getting loose and ureas are high, and that's just inefficiency of nitrogen. But look, back to your question, Jack, on the silage, it's going to be massive again, Jack. And I think, personally, in the springtime, silage is the manable that's going to dictate the climate and how we are going to get out to grass and how much grass we're going to grow in the springtime, Jack. But if fertilizer is going to be the price that it is going to be, or even if it is what it is around now, Jack, look, silage may be the answer early in the spring if we're not going to go with that nitrogen and grow that early grass, Jack. So look, if we can be strategic around that nitrogen, look, I suppose number one is condition score the cows. And I suppose even before that is scan the cows, see what's in calf and when they're due, condition score the cows, dry them off accordingly, Jack. I suppose the cows may be a bit under conditioned. Look, I suppose they need a certain amount of management and maybe an extended dry period. We talk about maybe 8 weeks, but realistically, Jack, an 8 week dry period is probably 6 weeks. Look, the cow's taken maybe a week to dry off and then a week back into lactation the other side. So look, It's you talk 8 weeks, but realistically it's six, Jack. And Joe, I suppose if we think about the silage, Jack, Joe, depending on the quality, look, we need to feed accordingly. And if cows are in good condition, maybe just restricting that feed a bit, let them run out of silage. And I suppose the other thing, Jack, is the potash in the silage. And often the potash has become better in silage, Jack, because there's probably sufficient amounts going out. And there's problems in around magnesium. So, look, these are just things maybe to think about going forward and just maybe just to get the head going, maybe just what the plan is now going forward with that.
Yeah, no, I think it's very timely. I mean, you know, one of the first ones, as you say, David, that guys can do is definitely kind of pull out those thin cows or those older cows, and it couldn't even be younger cows, like, I mean, finish first lactation, etc., and give them that slightly longer milk price. I mean, the temptation is to stay going, David, because milk price is good, and we're going to see it bouncing it again, I'd say, next week, you know. So the temptation is to stay going, but it's false economy, really, because you're taking it from kind of next year's milk. Isn't that it, really?
That's it, Jack. Look, and we talk about grass has been an unbelievable feed in the springtime. And look, it's questionable if that's going to be there, if we can grow it with the, never mind the price, Jack, but even the supply of nitrogen, you know, if that's going to be there. So look, if we can, I suppose, manage those cows accordingly into the back end of the year, and look, no more than the soil, getting the genetic potential of that soil, getting the microbes going and the maximum nutrient availability, no more than the slurry, testing that and seeing what's in the slurry, and I suppose, Jack, with the cows as well, conditioning them, get them up to scratch there before they calve down. So get sufficient minerals into them, magnesium, get the phosphorus up, and so get them good and healthy calving down, and I suppose that's having a healthy cow there, Jack, when they calve down is going to be half the battle, and it's going to make things very easy there, and I think it's going to be very important going into this spring particularly.
Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, and indeed to David Corbett from Grassland Agro for joining us. If you want more Farmers Journal podcasts, go to ifj.ie/podcasts or any of the webinars on ifj.ie/webinars. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.